Okay, so we're going to do just about 15 minutes focused on TMVR, and then we'll bring the rest of the presenters up here and kind of finish out the Q&A. Great. So questions on TMVR. Yep, Rush.
Thanks for the presentation. Just a couple kind of broader questions, because as this space develops, it seems like there's still very fundamental questions that haven't been answered yet, right, around repair versus replacement, and you've clearly made your bet on replacement. But how are you convinced at this point that that's going to be the approach that ultimately is the go-to for clinicians? And I have a follow-up as well.
Yeah, the way I would answer that is I'm only convinced because it's what physicians tell me they want to do. They could change their minds. If they find that it doesn't work very well, they could change their minds. But, we've seen enough already. We know this works, and we're still on our first-generation system. We know it works. We know it's very doable. We've already seen physicians get better at it as they do more than one case. And this is their preferred approach. So I'm very confident it will be. It's not to say there won't be a place for transapical, because there are going to be some patients who have a vasculature that isn't...
I was asking more on repair versus replacement, not the approach.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant transapical.
No, no.
Oh, okay.
I think, transeptals, by the way.
Yeah, repair versus replacement. It's kind of a little bit the same story. Repair, I think there's going to be a place for repair. But again, physicians tell us they would prefer to replace the valve if they can do it safely and if they think it's a durable procedure. Again, what's been good about the MitraClip is that they have a good safety profile. So it's allowed that market to evolve a little bit, but they still have a recurrence rate that the physicians would like it to be better, and they don't always completely solve the mitral regurgitation problem, where valves have a better tendency to do that. They just make it go away. So I do think if it can be done easily enough and safely enough, that'll be where they go.
And then the second question was just around what the clinical focus is for these devices. And I understand, early on it's going to be very sick patients, and so quality of life probably is enough. But as you think about expanding into the less sick populations, the big untapped functional market out there for mitral regurgitation, do you think you're going to need to show things like mortality improvement, slowing the progression of heart failure? Is quality of life going to be enough to get broad adoption and broad reimbursement for these technologies?
I don't know if it's enough to get all of it. I think it goes a long way. I do think mortality will be an important endpoint, and I feel very good about that. You saw the slide where the mortality rates with untreated MR are not good. I know we can improve on that. So I'm confident we can show an improvement and that there will be that. It's just I've heard physicians over and over say it's not just all about mortality, so don't just be focused on that. It's also about quality of life. And they tell us that because I think they're probably so close to the patient, they see that. But I think both are important.
And then it's just the last question, sorry, related to that, though. But as you're now designing these clinical trials, right, the CE Mark trial, the USID trial, have you started to outline, because nobody's willing to tell us what the trials look like, what the endpoints are going to be, what types of patients. Have you gotten to the point where you're ready to commit to what a trial will look like for those?
Well, we don't have it defined yet with FDA for the U.S. trial. That's probably the most tricky one because it's randomized and, you have to get a lot more into endpoints and things. And we're still negotiating that or in a process of that because it's really too early to do it yet. What I will tell you is that FDA has been terrific to work with. Best I've ever seen them in my whole career. They've gone through a transformation almost. They've made it easy from early access all the way on. They're working with us every step of the way. They're very committed to the trial being successful. They're trying to help us not make mistakes. I've never seen some of this stuff before. So I'm actually confident we'll be able to work out a very acceptable, kind of mutually agreeable study with them. I just don't know what it looks like yet. I'm guessing 400 randomized, maybe to surgery. I don't know what it'll be randomized to yet. CE Mark is actually much more straightforward. As I mentioned, it's only a 75-patient study. Now, they'll ask us to do another 75 patients post-market and follow them so that they have a 150-patient cohort in the end of the day to look at, but that won't be required for the CE Mark. So 75 patients, I think, is a very reasonable number. And, they'll probably make us do, 30-day follow-up for safety and then probably a year follow-up for complications and other things later. It's really not a we'll be able to get CE Mark, I think, fairly shortly after we complete enrollment.
Other questions? Scott?
Yeah, thanks. A couple of questions. Paul, just wondered what, if you could share why the material is porcine pericardium rather than bovine pericardium. I thought that it would have made more sense, given your personal connections, to have the same material. So perhaps you could talk a little bit about the differences there. That should be a relatively quick one. And the second one, Damien, also, if you could help add, with respect to the scalability of this, not just in terms of the manufacturing capability or manufacturing efforts for the clinical trials, but potential commerciality, but also the scale-up of the heart surgeon team as you're looking to enroll and accelerate the pace of enrollment.
I'll take the first one. You know, we chose porcine pericardium before, you know, really. It had nothing to do with Percival or not. I mean, it was just what we had chosen. And it was mainly because it's thinner. And we were trying to, we knew we were making, again, we designed this from the beginning to be a transfemoral system. We knew size would be an issue because of the vasculature. So we wanted as thin of material as we could that was still durable, clinically acceptable, proven. It's what CoreValve uses in the TAVR space. So we just felt very comfortable that that was a good choice for this type of a system. You know, we could have used certainly anything, but that's just what we thought was best.
It's actually interesting. We're now looking at the experience this team has had and, you know, going back and looking at Percival and saying, you know, is there an application for what you guys know about Valve that we can lay into Percival? So it's a nice symbiotic relationship, sort of, frankly, an unexpected outcome.
Yeah.
On the scalability, look, part of the reason, you know, I wanted to do the deal when we did it, and look, we could have let Caisson run separately for much longer, but the thing is, I didn't want this to be about funding milestones. And you know, the team have done a phenomenal job. You know, I was talking to someone earlier. You know, it's 100 square meters and 42 people have done this, and we didn't want people thinking about the next funding milestone rather than getting to the market first or second and getting, you know, Al and the broader team on board. The other thing related to that is bringing the broader LivaNova team in. So Brian, who a lot of you have met today, runs clinical quality and regulatory. All three of those are scalable, you know, can support this group. The ops team have already had a number of people up to Minneapolis to look at, you know, once we get through the feasibility and we start thinking about scaling for production, you know, firstly, how do we do, you know, the direct procurement for the delivery device, but then how do we scale this and where do we put it? You know, we've got two manufacturing facilities, one in Saluggia in Italy and one in Vancouver. So all of those decisions, I didn't want to get another year, 18 months down the track into the trials and then say, hey, where should we make this? I think this is a perfect fit for our footprint already. We know also, related to the customer, we know a lot of the cardiac units, thanks to a number of products we have. And it's funny, you know, Jason will tell you, some of the conversations we've had with people about Percival changed completely when we started the Caisson discussion, because now all of a sudden people took us as serious players in the cardiac space. So it's really been a door opener in a lot of ways. And we know a lot of the footprint, so we know where these people are. We just haven't had the right tools to be able to have, you know, good conversations with them. So we think from an account point of view, we'll be able to engage. From a specific surgeon point of view, we'll be able to engage. Clearly, we're going to have to build out the capability in interventional cardiology, but the good news is some of us have been through those wars before. You know, I was a Palmer Schatz franchise manager of Cordis. And so it was Alistair, you were, but, you know, there's a number of us have been through those wars, and so we know what to do. And the thing is, what we know is that the talent will come to where the great products are, and we really believe that people will follow us.
Other questions?
I would also add, Jason and I have been talking frequently about one of the nice things is as he and his team are out talking to cardiac surgeons, we get a lot of nice connections with them, and it's helpful for us because even though the interventional cardiologist is the one implanting, we really need the support of the cardiac surgeon in all these accounts to make it work, because a lot of times they have so much control and influence over a lot of the patients. So it's been a really, I think, helpful kind of interaction that we've been able to benefit from, is using TMVR is a bit of a conversation starter, but also getting introduced to all these surgeons so that we can include them in the team.
Other questions up here?
Put the mic. Right beside you.
Thanks. Just to carry on with that, just talking about your relationship with the surgeons, and that's important. But how many are there? I mean, how many relationships do you have to make to develop that market? And I just, you're talking about these other guys are going to help to develop the market, and you're going to be the take the lion's share. What on that slide where you showed some numbers against all these? What are those numbers? What are you showing us there? That's slide 8, I think.
Oh, that was just some of the M&A activity that's happened in this space. Is that the one you're referring to? The purchase price of those companies.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Because most of those technologies were acquired. Yeah.
Right. So, okay, that's what they're being paid. You're one of the cheaper ones in that space.
Better value.
Okay. But I'm not understanding what this is showing. You know, people invested a lot in or more than Neonovia in that. But how do we get a better picture of the investment they're making, not just M&A, but the effort they're making? Why should you get a bigger market share or a lion's share just because you think you've got the best technology? Because I guess all these other guys are paying these huge sums because they think they've got the best technology and they've got the best market entry because they've got the relationships with the surgeons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So you dive into the broader. So the first thing is really that was a highlight, and we haven't got into a broader conversation with everyone yet about return on invested capital. But what we're trying to signal here is we think we made an investment 5 years ago that has read through rather well, and that ultimately, in terms of return on invested capital, we're going to show a tremendous return on this investment. Why do we think we're going to win? And I don't think it's irrational exuberance. But
no, I mean, I think, like I mentioned before, I think it first comes down to who has the best product. Certainly, these companies have the resources to invest in everything we can invest in. They've got a lot of resources. I think we have the best product platform, and I think over the course of everything else, that wins. Assuming the clinical evidence for everybody is positive and that it's a good, it's safe and all that. It requires, the other big investment required is support of the customers. Yeah, these companies have a huge footprint in interventional cardiology, but all of them have had to develop specific support teams for structural heart, for TAVR, for whatever. We'll have to do the same. So I don't really see us as being at any disadvantage to them in terms of being able to build it. It's just required that we build a good team, and what we're trying to do is build what we think will be the best team out there. We're cherry-picking a lot of really good people who want to work with us because they think we have the best product. We still have to scale that as we get commercial and over time, but I think we can do that. Certainly done that with a lot of other technologies.
Just a novice, I mean, when we're talking about scaling, what are the numbers? How many people are you going to have to take on? How many surgeons do you have relationships? I have no clue about that.
Sounds
like thousands to me.
It's not thousands, but it's hundreds of. But again, we haven't gone public with our whole plan, nor will we. We don't need to give Edwards the playbook. But the fact is, we believe we have a great handle on it. The business case that we went through as we went to the board, had a very detailed case about how we were going to go after this and where we were going to target. And so we think we, again, without revealing what our playbook is, we think we know where the customers are. We think we've built out an extremely competent team early, but more importantly, the early relationships with key opinion leaders. Without disclosing who, we've got a number of the major key opinion leaders in this space working with us, either in the design phase or in the clinical phase. And again, that's an important part of why we think we're in as good a position as Edwards or Medtronic.